test. Yeah. I should try that sometime.
Just try it.
Way better. Okay, so thank you for the invitation. I'm Colin Perkins from the University of Glasgow, and I was asked to give a sort of overview of where we're at with the WebRTC standards in the IETF. So what I have is a sort of brief overview of where this came from, where the standards are at, and where things might go in the future. If anyone needs them, these slides are on my website in the PDF, so they're available. I guess we're also being recorded and this is, of course, a very personal reflection that's based around my interest in the IETF, and that doesn't necessarily correspond to everyone else's interests or everyone else's ideas of where this thing is going. So, and if there are any questions, do jump in. It's always better to get them answered straight away. So, where did WebRTC come from?
Well, I think it's a reaction against it.
The IETF has been doing teleconferencing standards for a very long time. I'd say 20 years, but it's probably nearer 40 years. Although in the current form, probably only 20, 25 years. And a lot of effort went into developing SIP. And SIP was, in some ways, extraordinarily successful. But it brought in a lot of baggage from needing to interwork with telephony, from needing to interwork with PSTN. And it ended up with something which was very rigid, very complex. And I think it was getting hard to innovate on top of this. There was too many pieces to it. It did a particular set of things very well. But interoperability was always a little bit flaky, and just building new things was getting harder and harder because of all the history and all the baggage. So the goal of WebRTC was to take the media transport bits of SIP, take the codecs, take the NAT traversal bits of SIP, build them into the browsers, but throw away the signaling parts. Right? Replace them with a standard API, on top of which people could build applications and people could innovate and build interesting new applications, interesting new services. By exposing things via an API, there was more flexibility to build these applications rather than the rigidity of just the things that SIP supports. What we ended up with as a result of that was a protocol stack that looks a little bit like the following. And this is squinting from about a 10,000 foot level. There is an incredible amount of detail in each of these boxes, which I'm, of course, skipping over. At the top, we have the JavaScript applications. Get downloaded from the web, they run on top of the WebRTC API, and those are the things where you can innovate. Those are the things where you can build new services and new applications. These talk down to the signaling layer via a protocol called JSEP, which I'll talk about. They also talk, regular WebSockets, HTTP, to talk back to the servers as needed. Underneath the signaling layer is some path discovery to figure out firewall traversal, NAT traversal, consent to communicate, and so on. It's also a peer-to-peer data channel and the peer-to-peer media flows, the audio and the video codecs, the RTP protocol, the actual media flow. And all of that runs over your regular UDP IP stack or TCP for the web's bit. At the top, the WebRTC API, the JavaScript applications, that's the realm of the W3C. I guess that's the meeting that's happening in parallel with this to finalize some of the JavaScript APIs, some of the WebRTC 1.0 JavaScript API. Underneath that is the realm of the IETF, which is where I've been involved. Defining the signaling protocols, the path discovery protocols, the data channel, and the media transport. What I want to talk about today is a little bit more detail about each of those four parts, where the standards are at, and then where some of them might evolve in the future. So first of all, let's start with the signal. The signaling work, the ATF signaling work for WebRTC has been focused around a protocol called JSAP, JavaScript Establishment Protocol, I think. And JSAP is an attempt to generalize and reuse the offer-answer model, which was used in SIP, and free it from SIP and turn it into a reusable component. It's the API for talking to the media transport, the data channel, and so on, the codecs, those bits of WebRTC. So it takes the offer-answer model out, brings it into this reusable part on which you can build the app. It exposes also the configuration of the browser in terms of the codecs it supports, the network interfaces, the transport protocol features, and so on, via the session description protocol, SDP. The goal here is to make simple things simple and difficult things possible. If you want to build a simple conferencing app, JSAP makes that pretty straightforward. You call some fairly straightforward API calls that give you a session description representing the capabilities of the browser and the way in which that browser is reachable. You take that SDP, you modify it as needed to suit the needs of your application, you ship it through the signaling protocol, your WebSockets or an HTTP port or whatever, to your server. Your server does all the complicated business of finding the people you want to talk to and passes that back down to their browsers. And that SDP blob is just fed into the JSAP instance of the browser at the far end. That configures the browser, passes you back an answer, which goes through the signaling channel back in, and you feed that in. And if all you're doing is setting up a call, that, I think, works pretty well. Take the JSAP, you pass it through the signaling into the other end, it comes back, and you pass the result back in. Where JSAP gets difficult is if you want to build anything more involved. If you want to actually extend this, change what the browser does, change the features it offers, change how it connects, or so on. Because you have to modify the SDP file that came out. And SDP is big and complicated and ugly, and modifying it, you know, it's not a protocol that's well suited to being modified by JavaScript, and what you're allowed to modify and how you're allowed to modify it isn't particularly well specified. So it seems to make simple things simple, complicated things, I think, are perhaps no simpler than they were before with SIP. And yes, maybe this wasn't the right choice. I don't know. Maybe some sort of API. I mean, Microsoft are pushing something called ORTC as a sort of JavaScript API to expose all of these things rather than exposing it as SDP. That might be cleaner in many ways. It probably makes these simple things harder, but makes it easier to do more complex things. As I say, JSAP's an attempt to extract all that offer-answer magic from SIP, turn it into a reusable part. Building that has been one of the big tasks of the signaling side. The other big task has been building an extension called Bundle, which is a way of combining the data channel, the audio, the video, the media flows, the NAT traversal, the security signaling, all onto one UDP port to make it easier to get through firewalls, to make it easier to get through NATs. That's been the other main piece of standard work in the ITF around signal. Taking a set of things which were originally designed to run on separate UDP ports, audio, video, the data channel, and so on, and putting them all together on one port and figuring out how to demultiplex them. And partly that's involved some RTP extensions, media transport extensions to actually physically separate them, but also it's involved a tremendous amount of signaling work. There are a lot of parameters in SDP that configure, you know, how the media codecs work, configure how the feedback works, configure forward error correction and retransmissions, and so on. All of which had originally assumed everything is running on a separate UDP port. So you can run retransmissions for your audio, and you can run retransmissions for the video. And since they run on separate ports, it's easy to tell which retransmissions are for which stream, for example. Once you start bundling them, not only do you have to separate the audio and the video, you have to separate all the retransmissions and the data channel and be able to identify the streams and be able to separate, well, you know, does this stream, RTP stream, correspond to this media section of the SDP, and what does that, what's that media section being used for, and so on. So there's been a tremendous amount of extensions around how you identify media blocks in the SDP in the signaling, which have particular roles, and how they relate to particular sets of packets on the wire, and how you map all those up when everything's bundled together on the same ports. And there's been a lot of, you know, the complexity in this, and I think the biggest complexity in building WebRTC has been the standards around this, how to multiplex everything together and then be able to separate it out again. Now, in terms of the actual standard specifications, we see we have a very large number of internet drafts which are specifying the signaling for WebRTC. And not very many of them are finished. We did manage the use cases and requirements, so that's a good start. Nothing else has yet been published as an RFC in terms of signal. I actually don't think this is as bad as it looks, but it has taken a lot longer than anyone had hoped. The difficult bit, as I say, has been the SDP bundle extension, figuring out how to demultiplex things and how to signal what gets multiplexed and what it means. That draft is now in working group last call. So that is essentially done. And yeah, working group last call probably means that people actually start focusing on it and then it gets replaced again. But all the big issues, I think, are resolved. Similarly, the SDP MUX attributes draft is done and is with the IESG. And that's one that specifies how all the different attributes are used when the different media flows are bundled together. So those are the two essential components for getting the bundling working. Those are both essentially done. The JSET draft builds on those and actually turns this into a useful component. That got updated, I think, this morning, so that it's clearly still being worked on. But again, the issues which are coming out are details rather than fundamentals. Now we've got the bundling nailed down. Now we have the service model nailed down. Everything is actually coming together. And all the rest, I mean, with the exception of the security drafts, all of the rest are details around them, around those things. There's a lot of things which are marked as in progress, but I think they're actually nearly done. I would expect JSET to go to a working group last call in the next month or two, as being optimistic, but by the next ITF meeting in November, I think we'll probably be done by then. And the security drafts, again, the security architecture, the WebRTC security, we know what's in those drafts. It's DTLS for the data channel, DTLS SRTP for the media channel, a well-defined ways of linking with identity providers. So I think, again, that's essentially finished, but just not written, if that makes sense. It's understood what is going in those drafts. Just the people writing them have been distracted trying to finish JSET and bundle. So this is, in terms of status, it looks bad. It looks like there's very little progress here, but I think actually things are coming together quite nicely. And I'm optimistic that by the next ITF meeting in November, this will be a lot more of these, we'll say, in working group last call. The other parts of it. Path discovery. Path discovery, the goal here is to figure out where the person you're trying to communicate with is located in the network. So it uses the STUN and the TURN protocols, the ICE algorithm. And how this works is it enumerates all the possible network interfaces on your host, both direct interfaces, IPv4, IPv6, VPN interfaces, relayed interfaces via an external server, and systematically tries them all in order until it finds a path which actually works for communication. Now, stun and turn and ace and all of the protocols here are actually very well understood. We developed these in the music working group probably 10 years or so ago, I forget exactly. It was still back when I was chairing that group, and I gave that up in about mid-2000s, so yeah, probably about a decade ago. And these have been widely deployed in the SIP community. And these work. And WebRTC is just reusing these same mechanisms. Trickle extensions for ICE to cope with changes are new, but the vast majority of this stuff is existing protocols that are just being reused wholesale. Now, a lot of this says in progress. The reason it says in progress is not because it's new or people are trying to figure it out. It's that people have taken the opportunity to revise these specifications and put in a bunch of optimizations and clarifications in the light of 10 years worth of deployment and implementation experience. So the overwhelming majority of this is very solid, stable protocols with long-standing implementations and lots of experience, which is getting a sort of polish and a tidy up for the next decade. So it all says in progress, but it's well understood code, which is just being reused wholesale. So that, the specs are not done, but they're well understood and we're tidying up details. The new things, the Alpen is for identifying what gets bundled again. The QoS, I'll talk more about that later. That's all about quality of service and differentiating services. And the controversial issue here was there was a privacy leak about the way WebRTC decided to use spun and turn, which could leak. I think the issue here was if you're using a VPN, if you're using WebRTC running over a VPN, then the IP address of the non-VPN interface could leak out. And people were concerned that leaked information really shouldn't leak. That wasn't a problem with ICE, it wasn't a problem with stun or turn, it was just a problem with the way WebRTC was collecting interfaces to feed into the ICE algorithm when a VPN was in use. And so the IP handling draft clarifies which interfaces should be collected in particular cases and closes that information leak. Again, something that looks like there's still a lot to do, but it's tidying up details. It's not fundamental changes, and it's building on existing protocols. So this is much more complete than it looks. The data channel, once the signaling and the path layer stuff has actually figured out how to communicate in a peer-to-peer fashion, there's a data channel gets established along with the media. The data channel is interesting. It runs SCTP, Stream Control Transmission Protocol, which is like a better version of TCP, tunnels it over Datagram TLS to secure it, and tunnels all that over UDP. Now, this has been done for like 2 years, with the exception of this end data extension, which is a pretty minor tweak. But the base protocol is... It's been in the RFC HQ for two and a bit years now. I think this is kind of neat. A peer-to-peer transparent data channel over which you can run anything in browsers. I think you can build some fun things here. I had a student build a Tor-based chat client doing onion routing over a bunch of browsers using this. So I think there's all sorts of fun things you can build. Once you have a peer-to-peer data channel. And there's a nice, fairly easy to use API. It seems to be there's a lot of details about the JavaScript libraries to drive that, which makes it a little flaky, but in principle, it's an easy to use API. And it's congestion controlled. It's not especially real time because it retransmits things if there's loss, but it works very nicely, and you can build all sorts of shared document editors, for example, over that, or file sharing applications that are peer-to-peer. I think people who who... I expect we're going to have a lot of stories about how people are deploying all sorts of interesting applications to circumvent file sharing restrictions built using WebRTC data channels. So if you care about that sort of thing, figuring out how to block this should be high on your list. But it's nice. It actually opens things up and lets people build peer-to-peer applications in a really easy way, and not just for telephony. Whether that's good or bad depends on your viewpoint, but it's interesting. Again, that's essentially done. The end data stuff, I think is nearly complete. I don't think there's anything controversial there. And finally, the bit which everyone perhaps was actually wanting this for is the media transport protocols. These are coming together. Right? There was a huge argument in the ITF about what codecs to mandate and whether we should mandate H.264 or VP8 for mandatory to implement video codec. After probably couple of years worth of discussion, there was a complicated compromise, which, if I'm paraphrasing it, boils down to everyone should implement both, with some exceptions for non-browser implementations of something which I don't quite understand. And a lot of this was driven by Cisco putting money in to release an open H.264 implementation. That was what was sort of reading some of this up. And that compromise was reached at just about the point where H.265 and VP9 were released and stabilized such that the recommendation was to use some obsolete codecs. But as a result, at least in principle, we should have interoperable, reasonably high-quality media. For audio, the Opus codec is mandatory to implement, as is G711 and BTMF. We can't get rid of those touch tones. Opus is pretty high quality, it's pretty flexible, it's a nice range of bit rates. G711 is what it is. There's a recommendation for AMR as well for interoperability with some of the 3G stuff. So that should allow people to gateway into the PSTN and the 3GPP world pretty nicely. And you can put in any other codec you like. I don't know what people are implementing, but there's the flexibility to negotiate other codecs. And that's all done. Right? The payload formats for H.265 and VP9 are still in progress, but they're pretty close to done as well. They're not mandatory to implement anyway. Underneath all of that is a modern RTP and RTCP stack. When I say a modern stack, what I mean here is this. It's an RTP protocol stack that actually implements the range of features we've been pushing into RTP for the last decade or so. So it actually has the RTP control protocol, so you can get reception quality feedback. It has NACs and retransmissions and codec controls, so you can request missing frames and XR block feedback and so on. So you can actually get detailed reception quality feedback. You can retransmit lost packets. You can do forward error correction and so on and so on and so on. And that's pretty nice. I'm actually quite pleased by how well some of the more advanced features of RTP have been taken up by these specifications, and people actually seem to be at least roughly implementing some of them. So we've got a nice media stack with some good control features, some good reception quality reporting features built in. The standards have taken a lot longer than I had expected. The issue here was partly to do with bundling, where it turned out that RTP made assumptions that different media flows were running on different UDP ports, that when you tried to bring things together onto one port and demultiplex them, things were maybe not as clear as they should be. So we had to clarify some of the assumptions about that, figure out how things got demultiplexed. There were some details around group conferencing, multimedia conferencing. Yeah. ATP has always supported group conferencing. It's always supported multimedia conferencing. But it turned out that the understanding of the people who originally wrote the specifications and the understanding of people who came in 15, 20 years later and read those specifications from scratch didn't necessarily agree with each other. So we had to go and clarify a bunch of things. And there are some multi-stream and multi-stream optimization and multimedia session drafts which make those clarifications. And again, they should all be backwards compatible, but they clarify a bunch of things, fix a bunch of minor issues. All of that is done. Right, the open bits, that the RID draft is the last bit of the demultiplexing framework. That is essentially finished, although it's not quite published. The multi-stream, multi-stream optimization, multimedia ITP session drafts are all with the RFC editor. We have RFC numbers assigned for them. Similarly, for the circuit breaker, it's got an RFC number assigned. It's just waiting on normative references. The only thing open here is the FEC, forward error correction scheme. This is something which the ITF has been extraordinarily bad at standardizing. We've standardized about four different forward error correction schemes for RTP in the time I've been involved, and all of which have been found to have fatal flaws later. I'm told this one doesn't have any fatal flaws, and it will work perfectly this time. We'll see. And yes, there's some security. I forgot to mention that. It's just the standard secure ITP with DTLS signaling. And at least if implemented correctly, it should give you a secure end-to-end path. So, where are we at? It's taken a long time. I think WebRTC has taken longer than anyone had expected or hoped at the time it started. The data channel, the media transport standards are essentially done. There's a couple of things where we're tidying up the loose edges, but the overwhelming majority of this is either published as an RFC or with the RFC editor just blocks waiting on a normative reference before it can be published, or in IESG review or working group last call. So those parts are finished. Path discovery. It's a stable, well-understood set of techniques which are being tidied up and the specs being revised. That's not finished yet. My understanding is it's recently nearly finished, although I haven't been following the details of that. The signaling protocols have taken a very long time. They're big and messy and complicated, as signaling protocols always are. They seem to be coming to conclusion. As I say, I hope they will be ready for working group last call by the November ITF. I think that's realistic. I expect the working group last call will throw up a bunch of minor issues, and it won't go to RFC status soon. There'll be yet another round of revisions before it goes to the RFC editor, because it's big enough and complicated enough that there'll be something not right with that when people really focus on it and do it. Why did it take so long? Well, IPR around the codex. The working group spent about 2 years arguing about VP8 versus H.264, and all in the guise of, well, technically which is superior, but in practice, it was an argument about patents and IPR. Decoupling SDP offer answer from SIP, turning it into JSEP. That turned out to be difficult. I guess that's not a great surprise. A bigger issue was trying to bundle the media and trying to combine everything onto one unique import. Now, I understand why that was done. I mean, I think we need to combine everything onto one UDP port if we're to go to have something that works through NATs and firewalls reliably. But that process turned out to hit a gazillion corner cases in RTP and a gazillion corner cases in the way SDP signaling works and the way things are specified. And this turned out to be very difficult and very fiddly. And we've ended up with something which works but has a tremendous amount of complexity to solve what should be a fairly simple problem. And I'm fairly convinced we could have done that much better by building an explicit multiplexing there, rather than making the multiplexing implicit and trying to resolve it all in the signal. And the revisions to Stun and Turn and Ice are taking time, but they're not difficult or controversial, they're just fiddly and, you know, as always, revising a protocol that has many implementations and much experience was just a bunch of little details to clarify. But the big issues were the bundling and the IPR. Where are we going? Well, I think we're now at the stage where we understand what WebRTC 1 is going to look like. We know what the IETF specification is going to look like, modulo minor details. We know what the API and W3C is going to look like. A few places where I think things can change, will change over the next few years. Quality of service. One of the things the IETF has done recently is figure out how to signal differentiated services for the media flows. So this is what DiffServ code points you use to say this is audio, this is video, this is the data channel, this is high priority audio, this is low priority audio, and so on. Now, we have an IRC, we have a draft which specifies how to do that. At least in principle, this is now resolved. In reality, I still think there are a bunch of issues. It took a while to identify a set of DiffServ code points which people believe can signal, you know, interactive audio, interactive video, data, high priority, low priority, and so on. Some of the code points that were identified are known to have differing implementations in different routers. Different vendors have interpreted these differently and changed the priority levels. What's actually out there and deployed and in use for real is not entirely clear. It could be none of it. It could be that you turn this stuff on and all the routers just ignore this entirely. Or zero it out at the first hop, I don't know. It could be that some of this stuff has actually been deployed and there are contradictory priority levels in use for real. I don't think we'll know until we have wide-scale deployment of WebRTC with differentiated services. So that's a potential issue because it can affect the priority of some of the streams. It's fairly clear that a lot of operators zero out the DiffServ field at network boundaries. It's fairly clear that some operators rewrite the DiffServ field or potentially discard packets marked with non-default priorities. As a result of all of that, it's not to me clear whether actually using differentiated services as a quality of service mechanism will give you any benefit with WebRTC outside a closed network. I think it's good that WebRTC has tried to use it. I think it's good that people are trying to push these features into use, but whether they'll actually work is an open question. And I think there is at least a risk that the use of DiffServ will actually harm media quality because it will cause calls to fail in some cases because people are filtering out in advance. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Congestion control. There are two bits to congestion control. There's a circuit breaker algorithm which takes the existing media flows, looks at the RTP feedback, and tries to determine if those flows are causing persistent excessive congestion. And the idea being that if they are, it can signal the browser to stop the flow. And there's then some actual congestion control algorithms to adapt the rate at which you're sending based on the capacity. The circuit breaker's done. In the initial tests we've done with it, it all seems to work. If anything, it's a little conservative, but it doesn't seem to cause problems. But that's been tested by a small number of people in a small number of scenarios. Whether it really works when you push it to 100 million users, who knows? Hopefully. So certainly all the initial evidence is that it will, but it's not been done, so we don't know for sure. The actual media adaptation, the congestion control algorithms, there are three proposals in the IETF. There's the Google congestion control algorithm, which is actually, I think, in or at least a variant of it is in the Chrome browser now. There's the NADA and the Scream algorithms from Cisco and from Ericsson. All of this, the Google algorithm has been reasonably widely deployed and doesn't obviously break things in the typical cases. The others are at very much an early stage. They're all being evaluated. None of this evaluation is is what I would call thorough as yet. They all seem sensible in many ways. Right? There's nothing I would look at looking at these congestion control algorithms and say that's crazy, that doesn't make any sense. Right? There's some good ideas in all of them, but they all do things differently and they all have different behaviors. I expect any one of them is probably good enough, but they'll all have corner cases, all have odd failure modes. And that's fine. I mean, TCP is the same, right? This is normal for congestion control, but we don't yet understand what those failure modes are, just because they're new algorithms that haven't been tested in all the possible cases as yet. They're also not done, right? The algorithms are not finalized. The feedback mechanisms to give them the information they need are only just starting to be developed. So it's pretty clear that the initial deployments of WebRTC are going to have, at best, pre-standards congestion control. And in many cases, probably no congestion control other than a circuit breaker, if that. That may or may not matter. I suspect in a lot of cases it doesn't matter that much. People have been using applications like Skype, which have similar types of congestion control for many years. And yet, WebRTC may get more of this traffic out there. But Chrome has it, has at least something. There are other algorithms out there that work well enough. But the congestion control solution is evolving here, and it's going to change over time. And certainly, if I was running a network and had many users using this sort of thing, I would be keeping an eye on it to make sure it's not congesting stuff, and the congestion control is at least approximately working. I think it probably will, but I think we can't know for sure until it's been deployed. ECN. It would be nice to get ECN, explicit congestion notification, deployed and used in the network. The current approach of waiting till the network gets congested, the queues at the routers fill up, the packets get thrown away, as a congestion signal, I mean, it's bad for quality because you're throwing some packets away, and it's bad for latency because you have to wait for the queues to fill. So if we can get ECN out there and deployed, so we get ECN marks before the queues fill up, before the packets get lost, that reduces the latency and it reduces the disruption due to packet loss. So these are unambiguously good things. Doing this, of course, means we need to update all of the routers to support active queue management. So deploy RED or CODL or PI or something like that. It means we need to update the circuit breaker algorithm to understand ECN marks and react perhaps slightly differently to those than it does to packet loss. It means we need to update the congestion control algorithms to understand ECN. Again, react differently, probably react less to an ECN mark than it would to a lost packet. And then actually build it and deploy it and make sure it works and make sure it gets through all the middle boxes and the firewalls and what have you. And this is starting to happen. Right? I'm actually pretty heartened. I mean, Apple are pushing this very hard with the iPhone and with the latest macOS to get ECN deployed, get ECN out there. But it's something that's going to take time to deploy. The circuit breaker needs updating, so there'll be another revision to that to include it. The congestion control needs updating. And all three of the congestion control candidates have ECN support in them. All three do it differently and incompatibly. So we need to sort things out. I don't think this is so bad, but it needs some work. There's also a proposal of something called L4S, something called TCP Prague, that just changed the way this worked radically, changed the loss response completely backwards incompatibly. Right? It doesn't even work with regular TCP, it's not just WebRTC, it doesn't work with. It's just a very radical change in how ECN is used, using the EC2-1 code point. If this happens, and I think this is at least a 5-year, probably near a 10-year project, then it looks like it will bring the latency down tremendously. Again, it's something to look at in the future. It's not going to be in initial WebRTC. We're talking about multicast, that word that makes everyone in the ITF run screaming from the room. If you look at how people do video streaming, there are two ways people do it. You've got your Netflix-style HTTP adaptive streaming. Pull it from the web in chunks and adapt. But there's also multicast. And some operators have very widely deployed multicast TV infrastructure. Right? You know, people have set-top boxes that run IP multicast and feed into their regular TV. And there are operators with tens of millions of users of this. The media protocol stack looks really similar to the WebRTC media stack. You need to add the join multicast group functionality, and you need to add the MPEG codec. And that's about the only difference. Right, so turning a WebRTC browser into a terminal that could receive these multicast TV things is actually a really minor change. Now, if I suggested it at the ITF, I'd be lynched, but you know, someone will eventually. I think at some point WebRTC is going to grow this feature. It's something I'll set it as a student project one year, an undergraduate project. Add this to WebRTC. It'll take a couple of months. And that'd be interesting. I think there's a bigger question, a much longer term question about how we do TV distribution on the net, and whether currently the multicast TV, the interactive RTP, and the web-based TV all use wildly different representations of the media. It would be very nice if they could use a similar representation, so you could at least gateway between web-based TV and multicast TV. So when something like the World Cup happens, you don't need 50 million unicast HTTP streams to watch it. You have one multicast stream. And finishing up, there's some new work starting in the ITF about half-life protocols and substrate protocols. Ways of running things over UDP, running new transports over UDP, so you can evolve the transport level. And Google's QUIC protocol is one protocol in this space. There's something called SPUD in the ITF, session protocol using data grams, that's what your acronym is. And there was a BOF at the last IETF looking at whether these things should be standardized. As I said, the biggest challenge with WebRTC was making the bundling, making the multiplexing work. And having an explicit path layer that can do demultiplexing and congestion control and adaptation and security, if it ever gets built and deployed, could then greatly simplify a future version of WebRTC. Now, again, we're looking many, many years in the future if this happens at all. But there's potential to simplify things, use any of these new substrate protocols as they come along, build simpler WebRTC-like protocols on top of them. And what else? Who knows? I'm a transport person, so all my examples are transport-related. It's clear that signaling is going to evolve. The SDP approach, the JSAP approach, is great for some things, but not brilliant for some of the more complex, more advanced use cases. Microsoft pushing something they're calling ORTC as an alternative there. I think there's a lot of good ideas in that. And it can probably be built as a layer with a sort of JSAP-style, SDP-style shim on top of it for compatibility. Something like that will probably happen. We'll make things more flexible at the lower layers with perhaps a bit more complexity, but more flexibility on top of it. People are going to be building JavaScript libraries forever to sort of layer on top of this stuff and do interesting things. I don't understand JavaScript, but that sounds like a good thing. The management tools, the monitoring tools, someone was mentioning call stats earlier. I think people like that are doing great work trying to bring in manageability and monitoring into WebRTC, and things are evolving in that space. Otherwise, I think we've got a good enough baseline. And it will take a while for the browser implementations to catch up, but the standards are getting close to stable. I think it's good enough to deploy now. Things will catch up with it. Things have stabilized enough that the implementation is going to actually start catching up and stabilizing. We've got some challenges, but I think it's ready for certainly deployment and people actually start building things on top of it. I think we're beginning to become stable here. And that's me. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? Again, on the discussion about the IPTV, also synchronous data streams like the subtitling and multiple audio channels. For instance, we have DVD subtitling text.
We did some work on that for RTP in general a few years back. I forget what the acronym is that that's called, but using the RTCP feedback to align different media streams for playout and different receivers, and the things like subtitling we did. We've got, they're not part of WebRTC as yet, but there are RTP standards for doing that sort of thing. So they could be brought in if there was an interest, and they could be brought into the IPTV standards if there was an interest. So in principle, it's possible, whether anyone's gone to the trouble of writing down, okay, you need to implement this, this, and this, and do it in this particular way, and I'm not aware of that.
Nobody's still implementing IPTV VOD servers.
I mean, no one's implementing IPTV based on WebRTC. People have implemented multicast VOD servers. They could talk to WebRTC clients without too much extension to the WebRTC client. And that might be a nice thing to do, because currently it's a bit ghettoed in set-top boxes. How that interworks with HTTP adaptive streaming and MPEG dash, I think, is an interesting open problem. And someone should resolve that, because it would make things a lot more flexible if they could.
Do you think that the Disney delay that we are looking at the WebRTC standardization has delayed also like April to join in with the WebRTC? What do you think?
Sorry.
The idea is, because it's not standardized, some vendors may not have jumped into the boat. And one of the failures right now is that because Apple doesn't support that, and the iPhone doesn't support that, it's not widely used. Do you think that it's because of the lack of standardization, or?
For getting it into the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, Apple didn't adopt WebRTC.
That's interesting, because there have been at least a few people from Apple at some of the WebRTC standards meetings, so they're clearly aware of this. I don't know. I expect they will adopt it eventually. I think they'll have to, just because it's getting enough. It's getting big enough with the other deployments. They'll have to.
Because there are applications that support that, but they are not the browser.
And you can support it with plugins, which is what people are doing on the Apple platform, but it's unpleasant. I suspect it's going to get big enough that they'll have to implement it eventually. But who knows?
Okay. May I have about Stantern? We know that the long-term credential authentication has many issues, the username, password. There is the REST API thing that Justin Berti, this is an expired draft.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, the third party authentication using Goat, is not implemented.
Right.
So you said that Stunturn is there and you have almost done with the things, but I see it is still open somehow.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, on the security side, my impression is the mechanisms, the media transport mechanism security, the data channel security, that level of detail is done. It's how the identity provision, how you tie the security for a call back to a person, which is perhaps not quite as done. And to be honest, I think we will see multiple different approaches there. What I expect is there will be a standard hook for tying into your authentication infrastructure. I'm sure there are issues there. That's more, I think, to my mind, that's closer to the W3C world, and I haven't been following it that closely. But the actual media, the data channel there, it seems to be well understood what to do. It's just how to tie into the identity provision.
Secondly, we are building a Stunturn infrastructure around Europe and for higher education and research. What do you think? Could it be a useful service to create a global Stun servers around and for WebRTC? Or what do you think if we have such an infrastructure? Will the universities and the application web application adapt this? Use this?
I can imagine people wanting standardized authentication and identity infrastructure. I think in the same way Edu Room has been massively successful. I think having standard ways of saying who you are and being able to make calls to people and will be a very good thing. In terms of relays and Stun and so on, obviously that stuff is needed. Whether it's something the university community can usefully provide, sure, I don't see why not, but I think there'll be plenty of other implementations of it as well.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the more of that stuff that's out there, the better. Although it clearly needs to be authenticated well.
You said that the standardization around Stunturn and those protocols are done. So if we build something based on the standard, it's sort of...
My impression is if you build something based on the current state of the standards, what they will turn into will be backwards compatible. It's evolving, but it's not to my mind, evolving in radically different incompatible ways. It's tidying up details.
So thank you.
Well, what is a comment on the last sentence over there? Are we really sure that the path to make the network faster and lower latency and more adaptive is really clear to the network engineers? Because at least in Size's young backbone, we just saw a couple of events in summer and spring, which was exactly the opposite. And a lot of people complained that they were saying the network is faster. No, it has more bandwidth, but it was lower. So,
there's always someone who disagrees. Yeah, I do think the ECN stuff. To my mind, if we can get a working AQM that everyone is happy with, the rest of it seems obvious. Yeah. Now, whether Coddle is the right answer or Pi or who knows, I think that perhaps needs a bit more experimentation. Cable Labs have started pushing Coddle for residential modems, for example. So it's starting to be deployed, and probably at the edges is where it makes the most difference.
And I was meaning the basic network, like layer 1, 2, physical. Yeah, that's the problem. They don't think about it.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Yes. Yeah, I just put the bits in and let someone else worry about it. I think that's true of a lot of people at this layer. Yeah.
Any questions from remotely? Remote participants.
Okay, so thank you.